The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, welcome to Not Another Anxiety Show. I'm your host, Kelly Walker, and joining me today is guest Dr. Sarah Woodhouse. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Thank you so much for taking time to hop on the show today.
Oh, it's such a complete honor to be here. I feel excited to be talking to you.
Yeah, me too. Do you mind if I share a little more about you before we get started?
No, please go for it.
Wonderful. So, Dr. Sarah Woodhouse is a research psychologist, trauma specialist, author, coach, and founder of The Freedom Process. Her book, You're Not Broken, Break Free from Trauma and Reclaim Your Life, came out in the UK in April. Sarah lives just north of Brighton in the UK with her husband, three kids, and new kitten Lola. You can find her on Instagram at the Sarah Woodhouse or at her website, www.sarahwoodhouse.com. A new kitten, huh?
I realize I put that in the bio. Yeah, she's a little scamp.
Oh my gosh, I love it. My kids so desperately want a kitten. I'm like, well, we already have two dogs, so we have our hands full here.
No, you've taken it to the next level. We're desperate for a dog, but we okayed a kitten.
I should have gone that way is what I should have done. So I wanted to start by saying that, you know, I read your book and wanted to thank you for dispelling some common misconceptions and myths around what trauma is, who it affects, and how it can show up. And at some point, you say something along the lines of, you know, most people think trauma is something that happens to other people, which is how I used to feel when I heard the word trauma. I'm wondering if this was your experience, you know, your personal experience as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, for sure. I mean, I think I put it in the camp. So I just, to me in my head, it was synonymous with PTSD and veterans, right? Essentially, that was all I understood it to be. And I had this bizarre moment before I went into research, and I was working as a lobbyist, and I was working with a charity who they brought people back from secret prisons, essentially. So they were repatriating people, many of whom had been tortured. So they of course had high levels of PTSD. And I was working alongside these clinical psychologists who were doing the most incredible job. And at the same time in my personal life, I was seeing a therapist, and the therapist said to me, just so you know, a lot of what you're bringing to me, a lot of what we're talking about, i.e. my eating disorder, high levels of anxiety, panic attacks, dissociation, she said, just so you know, it's allowing me to know and to see and feel that you have experienced trauma. So I had this bizarre moment of like, well, how can that be trauma over there, where these guys have experienced such extreme severe events, and then me over here, you know, living life in London, I mean, admittedly I was extremely dysfunctional, but still living life, yeah. You know, how can that be trauma as well? So it just led to this complete preoccupation, obsession with wanting to understand what trauma is, because it is both. That's the point. It is both of those things.
Right. And sort of like reconciling what feels like this discrepancy. And I think you touch on it. You know, so many of us hear the word trauma and we picture physical abuse, torture, war, the worst atrocities, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about what is trauma? Maybe what are some of the lesser known causes of trauma that we might dismiss or not think of? But what really, if you break trauma down to its most, I don't know, general meaning, how can we sort of comprehend what that is?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that we now know categorically that developmental trauma, so children who've experienced trauma within, often within a parental relationship, have the same, very similar, not completely the same, very similar symptoms to those who've experienced shock traumas. So that's the first thing we're seeing in terms of the symptoms. There's just huge crossover. But the definition that I use that I think allows everyone to find their way into it is that trauma is a reaction to any experience in life that makes us feel overwhelmed, very threatened, and out of control.
Yeah.
So I think when you begin to use those three very human terms, we can all begin to understand that actually this isn't just about those extreme severe events. It's also about much more kind of, I'm doing air quotes, normal everyday experiences, particularly childhood. You know, if you think about how often you felt overwhelmed when you were a child, or how often and easily it was to, and quickly you felt threatened, you know, you perceived a threat or you felt out of control. When you put those three in the context of childhood, you think, oh, okay, I get it. I get that an experience that doesn't necessarily look traumatic standing right over here for that child could potentially be. And the key is that it happens when they perceive a threat. And then if the threat feels just too big for them to handle, that's where that overwhelm and out of control piece comes in. So they perceive a threat, they within a millisecond, you know, a microsecond, whatever it is, they ascertain that they do not have the internal and external resources to deal with that threat, whether it's dad shouting and screaming at them, or whether it's, you know, what we traditionally think of as trauma, kind of more of an external threat or one of those severe shock traumas, whatever it is, they determine they don't have the resources to deal with it. And that's when we move into the fight, flight, freeze response. In a way, that means it doesn't resolve.
Does that make sense? That makes absolute sense. And I think it allows for a lot more subjectivity in the experience than maybe some of us realize. Like, you know, I know you use this cool equation in your book, which is like perceived threat plus overwhelm plus powerlessness, right? Can result in trauma. And it's like, well, you know, if we don't have certain resources, right, something that may overwhelm one of us might not overwhelm the other. Or it just sounds like there's a lot of subjectivity, right? Like it's not necessarily these external experiences or those shock traumas that we really associate with, right, PTSD trauma, but that, you know, depending who we are, what our resources are, you know, what our support systems like, what our, you know, relationships are like, it sounds like there's maybe more room for trauma than many of us believe.
There certainly is. And I love your explanation and understanding of that subjectivity, because that's really what it's all about. You know, so I had a conversation last week with someone and they said, oh, so does that definitely happen? So if a child experiences that, will they definitely have trauma? No, we're in the realms of, you know, it's all about subjectivity, individual differences, as you say, support. It's massive. Right. It really is. And that a child or even our internalized model of support, do I have enough support? Which is why it's so critical, of course, when you think of it in terms of this space and preventing trauma, why it's so important that we make sure those we love feel supported, because it plays such a big role in preventing trauma potentially.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned a few ways in which trauma kind of showed up for you. You know, you said like disordered eating, anxiety. Are there other common ways that trauma can show up? I guess for our audience purposes, like in adulthood, like some ways that trauma might show up that we might dismiss or not realize that are sort of, I want to say, red flags is not the right word, but that are sort of signs that maybe we need some support or healing or help.
Yeah, absolutely. The two big ones, and I think it is so interesting, because when you're in the kind of trauma field, what we're often looking at is what's happening at a nervous system level.
Yeah.
What's going on there? And of course, then we're thinking in terms of either these fight flight symptoms, which is all about arousal. You know, it's about mobilizing energy, huge burst of adrenaline, so that we can then try to deal with the threat, whatever that might be. But then at the other end of the scale is the freeze response, which is completely the opposite. So we move in the other direction. The vagal nerve slams on the brake to the adrenaline, so we can feel very, very spaced out, because essentially what we're trying to do is hide. So if you move upwards and think about, okay, well, what is anxiety? You know, what we're learning or certainly is being theorized now is that anxiety essentially is an incomplete fight flight response. So that, okay, I would say is a, you know, if you're listening and you do struggle with anxiety, not just event specific, if it's situational, that's potentially something different. You know, if it's rare, I mean, but if you're frequently feeling highly elevated in response to precisely the same people, things, you know, then I would start to say, okay, well, it sounds like you're being triggered. So it sounds like you're being reminded of something that hurt you in the past. And as you say, that's when we need to explore further.
Yeah, that was, you actually kind of touched on one of my questions, which was, how do we know if we're stuck in a trauma cycle or an anxiety cycle? It sounds like there is a very close relationship between the two.
There is a close relationship, but in terms of healing, they're both about learning to self-regulate.
Yeah.
So they're both about really educating ourselves about what the nervous system's doing and what it looks like to regulate. Because the ideal scenario is that our kids are growing up in homes where the parents are both regulated, i.e. they are moving up. Of course, they're going to move up into that stress response sometimes, but they're going to drop back down. So they've got that beautiful rhythm, you know, up, down, up, down, up, down. That's regulation. That's and if we're...
So it's not that we never get up. It's just that we regulate and come back down.
Precisely.
With more ease. Okay.
That's exactly it. So the skill of self-regulation is noticing when you've gone up and then being able to pull yourself back down. Now, if we grew up in a home where our parents were regulated, it's very likely, very feasible that our bodies know how to do this. But if we grew up in a house where our, you know, mum or dad were particularly anxious, where they had their own issues going on, where they weren't particularly present, you know, all of the, again, normal stuff, right?
Right.
Potentially that will have impacted your system and you'll struggle to self-regulate. Now, we could talk in terms of trauma there, because potentially there's a stuck fight, flight or freeze response, or we can just think in terms of self-regulation. Either way, what we need to do is help the body learn to regulate. So help it move back into this natural rhythm where it goes up and down, up and down.
That's the work.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Whether we're kind of stuck in anxiety or trauma cycle, which it sounds like there's a bit of overlap a strong relationship, that the way to healing and moving forward is pretty synonymous. So what it sounds like, you know, I know you say this in your book, like healing trauma is so individualized. There's no right way, but it sounds like there's sort of this commonality, this common ground that, like, okay, this is about learning, especially when we haven't. Self-regulation, almost like learning a new language, right? Like teaching our nervous system a new way.
It is teaching a new way. And then, you know, if you have that as the kind of centerpiece that we're looking for, it's like, okay, well, how do I do that? What are the skills that I need? And that's about learning to embody safety. So learning, we almost need to develop a different relationship with our body, because trauma symptoms across the board, whether you're going into that kind of shutdown, freeze, depressive, detached state, or whether you're up in anxiety and with those anxiety-like symptoms, it's all about disconnecting from the body.
It really is. I remember getting sort of, I had panic attacks on and off my whole life from the time I was like you know, 9 or so, and I'd get them occasionally, and they didn't scare me. And it was coming back to like your equation. It's that perceived threat, overwhelm, powerlessness. And I remember having a panic attack, and the perceived threat was just higher. I was like, I didn't even think it was a panic attack. I'm like, this, my heart's giving out. I'm clearly dying. So that perceived threat was high. I was really overwhelmed. I was by myself. And then, you know, when you see a provider that doesn't really empower you or hear you and dismiss it, you're kind of left in this aroused state. But like, but I almost just died. Are you sure you checked everything? And it just kind of reminds me of that.
Absolutely.
Just all the ways it can show up, right? Like all the ways this can show up.
And I think a phrase that I've started using with clients that they're really resonating with is threat mode. In a session, and she was like, oh, she really got it. And we talked about hypervigilance, you know, how we're scanning for threats. And also I said, but you know, that threat mode, you're applying that vision that there is a huge problem, there's a huge emergency, when you are thinking about what's going on in your body and your own symptoms. And that was really useful for me personally as I grew and I healed, understanding that I was completely coming from a place of fear, reacting from a place of fear to my own symptoms, which obviously made them worse.
Yeah, it's the cruelest feedback cycle there is. And
just mind-blowingly awful. Yeah. And so often when you're working with people, you know, when I work with my therapist, my somatic practitioner, so often really what they're doing is, it's just this almost mantra of, it's okay, you're okay.
And you connect,
coming back to place of connection, core connection, trust, self-compassion. Okay, everything's okay. And then you go on about your day. You move out of threat mode, out of emergency mode.
And it's really like this learning a new language. It's part of the reason I had panic attacks. I didn't even know I had a body to listen to or to tell me, like, hey, you're burning the candle at both ends, or, you know, this isn't sustainable, or, you know, my habits of kind of moving through life and difficulty and challenges, you know, they worked until they didn't. And it's just, it's interesting that when we learn, right, to connect with the body, to connect with what makes us feel safe and protected, it really is like learning a new language. It's, you know, because if we knew how to do it, probably we wouldn't be struggling with that high arousal anxiety mode anyway. So it's, but yeah, I can't agree more. You know, it really is, it's supportive. And it's, I don't know, for me, for a long time, I didn't even know what self-compassion or loving kindness meant. I was like, I don't know what those words even mean, but right, with sort of that support and guidance. And, you know, you speak to it wonderfully in your book that we really, I mean, your book's called You're Not Broken. And I think that's really sort of the punchline, right? Is like, we hear this word trauma, we receive this diagnosis, like developmental trauma or whatever it might be. And it's like, I think so many of us are dismissive or, you know, kind of sidestep it or downplay our experience because it feels like, my God, if I accept this diagnosis or consider it, it's like, it feels like doom, gloom, broken, no coming back from that. But it sounds like there is hope and there is a capacity to retrain our nervous system for self-regulation and that sort of safety embodiment that you mentioned.
There really is. And it's incredible, I think. I mean, so this idea that it's even a diagnosis.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how can we reframe it, right?
Because really what we're talking about are very human responses.
Right.
Feeling really overwhelmed.
Yeah.
It's feeling really threatened. It's feeling out of control. And actually one of the many reasons I love Peter Levine's work is that there's part of his book in Waking the Tiger. He says something like, admittedly, you know, shamanic cultures and they don't handle trauma necessarily in the way that we would want to, but one major benefit that they have over us is that their communities, their societies that recognize that if someone has been deeply overwhelmed, they need to just stop and process and release. So they rather than if we think about modern culture, it's just like, oh, you're overwhelmed. Go on, go to work. Get on with your day.
Keep pushing, double down. Yep.
That's it. Exactly, double down. There's no space made for the very natural process of needing to cry, understand, have cuddles, you know, be supported. Yeah. It's like we've developed this system that has pathologized something that's really normal. It really is. So if your therapist says to you, I think it might be trauma, I understand that the word is so potent, but right. it's really not what you think it is. It is such a human thing. All they've said to you is, you're human. That's what you've been told.
Oh, I love that. That's how we can reframe it. It's like, this is not, it's not, you know, an indication of brokenness. It's not an indication of weakness or an inherent lack of capability, right? It's like, okay, this is what can happen to anybody's nervous system when they feel overwhelmed and like there's a high threat and they feel powerless. Like that is just what happens to any human nervous system mm-hmm. when those things are in place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And actually that's such a lovely grounding habit to get into when you are triggered, when you do feel really overwhelmed. And I would really encourage people, you know, if you experience anxiety, to use the term fight flight. Okay, I've been triggered, or I've gone into fight flight. That's what's happening. When you're flooded with anxiety, you have, you know, the sympathetic part of your nervous system has taken control. You've been flooded with all these arousal hormones. So state it, you know, name. I'm constantly with clients. You've got to name it, notice it, and then reassure. And part of that naming and noticing, it's really nice if you call a spade a spade. So, okay, I've gone into fight flight. And then the next really beautiful piece that I practice personally is everyone goes into fight flight sometimes. It just takes the edge off it. Like there's nothing maladaptive going on here. It's normal. It's protective, you know. And so stating that this is normal. There's millions of people all over the world who've just gone into fight flight. Now what am I going to do about it? You know, how can I then, you know, connect to that vagal nerve and bring myself back into that lovely middle space?
Yeah, that is a wonderful sort of takeaway for integrating that. And I know the process of healing from trauma is so much more nuanced and complex than this, but is there, in addition to sort of what you just shared, is there a certain technique, resourcing, whatever, people listening in can sort of integrate into their daily life for support and growth? I love how you just said naming it, right? Like name sort of objectively what's happening. Like it's so easy to start bringing in judgment, but it's like, I am in fight or flight. Okay. And lots of people are in fight or flight. It is a normal human response. Is there any other, I don't know, grounding body, anything that comes to mind that you personally love or use with clients that somebody can easily integrate or take away?
Yeah, I think the piece that overlays really nicely on what I've just said is that when people work through my program and through many trauma treatment programs, you know, whatever, or with a therapist, what they're trying to do is help people differentiate. So really what we're trying to do is help people pull apart the strands, because it just sometimes feels like your head's going to explode, doesn't it? You just can't get the space. You can't, you know, you can't see the wood for the trees. So what we're trying to do is pull all these strands apart. Okay, what's my thinking doing? What's my body doing? How am I feeling? What's happening with my behavior? So we pull apart the strands. And interestingly, we do that to then allow integration. So it's this really interesting process of like separate, pull it all apart, and we do so we can integrate, which basically just means accept all the beautiful parts of ourselves.
I love it.
So I think the thing that overlays really nicely on what I've just said is the idea of an unseen child self and then an adult self, because when you use that voice, so when you observe what's going on, you know, I find it so mind-blowing just thinking about it, but there is something, a part of you back here observing, right? So in that moment, when you notice fight, flight, and when you notice the anxiety and you notice the thoughts going round and round, you're not them. And that is a really important piece. So we're constantly trying to pull back here so that you can observe. And when we can do that and observe and even add in a pause. So first we observe, and then can we actually pause? And so we're kind of creating this space. And
right
back here we've got, you know, I call it core self or adult self. And then also understanding that the part of you that's responding and being triggered is a younger wounded part of you. Yeah. So that idea of an unseen child self. And I use that term, I call her, he, her, unseen child, because it makes it so clear what we all need to do.
It does.
You just need to see them.
Especially if we have kids. I feel like this one can really resonate because we see what works and doesn't work with kiddos, right? Like if they're really dysregulated and really overwhelmed or scared, right? Seeing them, nothing regulates this. If we try to logic them out of it or dismiss it, you know, either they're going to explode or internalize it and come, that comes out in its own ways. But I think sometimes for those of us that have kids or kids in our lives, to just sort of see what works, how we support them, it sometimes makes it a little easier to show up to ourselves with that compassion.
Totally. But that space, you know, if you can begin to get an idea of an adult self who is observing and watching and pausing
and caring, it sounds like there's like a caring tone to it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just a really lovely way in. I would really recommend that people begin to explore that, the idea of this kind of unseen child self who's triggered and reactive and anxious, who needs to be seen and heard and needs your reassurance.
Oh, I love that. Well, I know your child, your four-year-old, I have four-year-olds too. I know they're going to come dawdling in soon. So
I want to see her little feet come up. I can see her little pink trainers tracking up the drive.
It's like, mommy, I'm ready. So I just wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to hop on the show.
Thank you so, so much. I don't want to sign off. It's been such a wonderful chat. Thank you.
Well, we'll have you back, Sarah. Don't you worry. Thanks. Well, that's our episode. Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and take a minute to write a review on iTunes so that we can reach and support more people. If you're looking for one-on-one coaching or have a question you'd like answered on the show, please visit notanotheranxietyshow.com. And until next time, remember, be kind to yourself.